Welcome back for another episode of RBP. It is me, Ross Bolin, here as always with my bottom betch, Jared Borslow. J-Bone, how was the long weekend in this sizzling hot paradise?
It was good. It was really hot. I played disc golf yesterday, but got rained out 11 holes in, which is pretty sad.
Did you play in the evening?
No, I played. This is my first time playing a daytime round of disc golf in Austin since like February, and only my second daytime round since in the last year. What people don't know about me, I play like the vast majority of my disc golf at night with glow-in-the-dark discs and a light on the basket.
Right.
People are probably like, another classic J-Bone joke. No, it's what I do. It's like one of my hobbies.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where like if you play classic golf and you're trying to make the direct comparison, like, no, this is way more normal and fun. Like, yeah, with the discs and the glow-in-the-dark. You know how people try to play golf at night on either lit courses or using a glow-in-the-dark ball?
Yeah.
That's miserable.
I've done the glow-in-the-dark ball before. We played in a glow-in-the-dark disc, or glow-in-the-dark regular ball golf, as many call it.
Ball golf, yes.
Tournament. And what they did was they shortened the holes like 25%. So a lot of the par fours were reachable. And so we hit like two or three times into the group in front of us because it was so dark. We couldn't see if they were on the next tee or still on the green.
Oh, this sounds safe.
Yeah, I think Dan almost hit a guy.
Yeah. That's another one of the reasons I quit my fantasy football league. It was a golf tournament every year where we would do our draft.
Mm.
And these guys think it's hilarious to hit into each other.
Wait, really?
I'm dead serious.
That's like, I would always be like,
well,
dangerous.
One of us is inevitably going to die. And I got out of there before it could be me. I have some unfortunate news to report to begin today's show. Over the weekend, I received a message from Dave & Buster of Dave & Buster's. Stock ticker is PLAY. Roughly $35.36 a share right now, as we are a Financial Times podcast.
Don't remind me.
But that's neither here nor there. The message read as follows. As a valued member of Dave & Buster's Rewards, we are informing you that our current program will be ending October 25th, 2021. Here's what that means. You will still be able to access your account, earn points and rewards, and view your account history through 11:59 p.m. Central Time on 10:25. 21. After 10:25, rewards points are a thing of the past that can no longer be earned. Members with over 50 rewards points will be rounded up to 100, and your free rewards chips will be issued to your account. Members with under 50 rewards points will be issued a thank you coupon via email. Game chips on your power card will be unaffected. J-Bone, imagine having 49 rewards points.
Well, maybe...
Such a bummer.
For those people, maybe this is why they're giving you this month and a half warning.
So you can earn one more?
Yes.
Ah.
This is actually a smart play by them. To
it's
get
kind
everybody
of genius,
under 50.
Right?
Yeah, to get to 50.
Because the best thing about the rewards points, if you recall from when I last explained them, and that I've been earning them for 20 years, this is devastating to me, obviously, that they can't be redeemed for prizes. Okay? They could never be redeemed for prizes. Therefore, they weren't really that cool. But to have 20 years of them taken from me is devastating. I am asking at this point that President Joe Biden step in and do something about this to protect the American people. I didn't spend 20 years collecting D&B rewards points to watch them disappear overnight 6 days before Halloween. Also, who the fuck, Jared, is logging in to a web browser or app or even downloading an app to track their D&B rewards points?
What I want to know is this. How many rewards points do you have? You keep saying, 20 years worth. But like,
I feel like that's a lot like asking, like, how much is your house worth? It's like, that's kind of personal, dude.
Like, how much Bitcoin do you have? Like, it's like,
yeah,
there's
the
similar cryptocurrencies, Dave & Buster's reward points. A lot of people are saying that Dave & Buster's reward points, up until when they get killed in the end of October, are actually going to outperform Bitcoin.
Yeah, that they're going to quadruple X times infinity in value after they're cut off, because they can no more Dave & Buster's rewards points can be created or mined.
Scarce. And yes. I've also heard that Honduras and Panama are considering making Dave & Buster's reward points legal currency.
Oh, things have come so far,
technology-wise,
as it pertains to the economy in the last several years, Jared.
It's just rough that this legislation was like about to become law right as they made them completely worthless.
It's just crazy to me that they were like, to your point, like, I've always been, I guess, privileged D&B scum, where I didn't really have to worry about how many rewards points I had. And I didn't realize there were other people out there who did need to download an app or use web browsers to track their D&B rewards points and keep up with them. And, you know, it's me now admitting my Dave & Buster's privilege and checking it, which is just, you know, more growth that I think I've proven here today personally for me. And you're welcome.
So what I'm wondering about Dave & Buster's reward points, because I'm not a D&B veteran. So if you get 100, apparently, or at this point 50 plus, mm-hmm. You can exchange those for gameplay.
Yes.
And then you can get tickets from the gameplay that you can then exchange for prizes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But remember, the value feed there is not as it seems, because you have to spend $100 worth of real human USD. What is it? Fiat?
Fiat, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Look at me. And to win like a $60 Xbox game. So if you're having this, like, and if spending money there is what gets you the points in the first place, but then the points can only get you to spend more time playing the games and in their store, and then so that maybe you can win a prize that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's why rewards points are a deflationary currency.
Right. Right. So. Which is different than an inflationary currency.
It's the opposite.
The opposite. The polar opposite, some might say.
So what is really like the big news story here is if you have, there's a certain like point of like a certain amount of points you can have right now to where it's worth it for you monetarily to get to 50, because you get double for free.
What we're going to do is cut off today's episode, and I am going to sprint down the street, because I don't drive right now, to my nearest Dave & Buster's so that I can ensure that I get up over the threshold. I might open a couple new accounts and grind those accounts up to 50 points or over so that I can be rounded up to 100 and accumulate as many rewards tokens as possible in an effort to drive up generational wealth for my family.
I've got a question. Are there people, you know, like you're sober, you don't drink alcohol, you drink root beers and such.
And water and, like, you know, other human things, sure.
Are there people who are, like, casino sober, and so they go to Dave & Buster's as, like you lose money either way.
Are you what you're asking right now is if gambling addicts utilize Dave & Buster's in the way that, like, a heroin addict might utilize methadone.
Yeah, like, I think Dave & Buster's is a halfway house for gambling addicts to ease their way back into non-gambling society.
But also to ease you into gambling society when you're a small child.
Yes.
Wow. So you're telling me, Jared, that Dave & Buster's both trains us to become gambling addicts and then offers us some kind of safety net from being a gambling addict.
It's like somebody who gets into heroin from methadone and then goes back to it. It's like somebody who gets into hard drugs from a Juul and then goes back to the Juul.
But they have always said that Dave & Buster's is a gateway drug to full-blown gambling addiction.
I agree with that.
The scientists have said that. Anyway, that's our D&B news for the day. This episode of RBP is brought to you by Felix Gray Glasses, the greatest glasses company in the world. 5 years ago, Felix Gray realized our eyes were not meant to look at screens all day, and they designed glasses to make screen time more comfortable and the workday more productive. I've got several pairs. I've got the Faraday frames, the Nash, my newest pair of the West. Got a pair on my face every single night. Y'all see me wearing them all the time on Twitch. I've been wearing glasses and contacts since I was 12 years old. These are not just any glasses. They're special blue light glasses that protect your eyes from all the bad things that screens bring. Screens, Jared, we cannot live without them, but they're burning our fucking eyes out day by day, minute by minute, hour by hour, and that's where Felix Gray steps in and saves all of our fucking eyes. There are a lot of blue light glasses on the market. To lump them all together would be like lumping Honda Civics in and Teslas together as cars. Most clear blue light or lenses filter 2 to 3% of blue light from screens. Felix Gray filters 15 times more. Get yourself a pair of glasses made for the 21st century and designed for modern, hardworking eyes. You have nothing to lose except maybe eye strain. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/RBP to support the show and get yourself the best blue light glasses on the market. That's felixgrayglasses.com/RBP. And when you go to felixgrayglasses.com/RBP today, Jared, guess what?
What?
Free shipping, free returns, free exchanges. felixgrayglasses.com/RBP.
Grab your light. This is Stop the Wikipedia when you're high.
I'm going to apply a trigger warning here.
Yeah, when I saw this on the rundown just like now, this is not where I thought this was.
Just now?
Yeah.
Just now. You didn't know we were going to talk about this till just now?
Yes.
Oh my God, I'm so happy to hear that. Today's Stuff to Wikipedia When You're High is the Enumclaw horse sex case. And for those of you who are longtime fans of the internet, probably have to be over the age of 30. You may recall a sort of urban legend of the e-web called Mr. Hands. Now, I first became familiar with Mr. Hands as a young man when at some point I was told the story that I'm about to tell you. For many, many years, Mr. Hands slipped from my memory, forgotten,
repressed
to the world, much like the ring in Lord of the Rings. And then one day, I was watching Broad City, a very funny comedy television show that is no longer on the air, that I watch on Hulu from time to time, and they had jokes about Mr. Hands. And one of the characters, Ilana, gets fired from her job for utilizing Mr. Hands in a shock social media campaign to draw attention to her brand that she's working for. They don't find that to be as funny and effective as she does, and she is fired. Now, you may be wondering, well, what the hell is Mr. Hands? Why is it so offensive? Why did she get fired? And why are you applying a trigger warning to the top of this Stuff to Wikipedia When You're High? And the answer is because this segment contains talk of bestiality.
Yeah, a lot of people, a lot of kids growing up in, you know, my age range, probably like, you know, mid to late 20s all the way down to maybe like 18 years old right now, if you fall in that age range, you might think Mr. Hands is the final boss in Super Smash Brothers.
I also thought that.
It's not.
It's not the same Mr. Hands anyway.
He's a final boss, all right.
Yeah, so if you're not comfortable with one of the more disturbing stories in the history of the internet as it regards, in regard to like, just animals and humans in ways that aren't supposed to be. Just skip to the next segment. No big deal. But if you want to stick around for what I find to be both hilarious and disturbing, here we go. The Enumclaw horse sex case was a series of incidents in 2005, which is not long ago. 2005 is when I graduated from high school, Jared, involving Kenneth Pinion. He was an engineer who worked for Boeing and resided in Gig Harbor, Washington. Also, James Michael Tate, a truck driver, and one other unidentified man. And some other unidentified men.
We don't even know how many.
We don't know how many. Pinion and Tate filmed and distributed zoophilic pornography of Pinion receiving anal sex from a stallion under the alias Mr. Hands. And when I said stallion, I mean a horse. Not some kind of reference to like a well-hung man. Like an actual stallion. After engaging in this activity on multiple occasions over an unknown span of time, Pinion died during, like, because of one of the incidents. So the story was reported in the Seattle Times and was one of that paper's most read stories of 2005. I don't know how it wasn't the most read. I would like to know what was. Perhaps it was Blippi related. It was informally referred to as the Enumclaw horse sex case, which I gotta think they could have come up with a better name. That sounds just as awful as the story itself. Pinion's death rapidly prompted the enactment of a bill by the Washington State Legislature that prohibits both sex with animals and the videotaping of such an act. Meaning, up until Dude and his homies decided this was a thing they were going to partake in, more on that in a second, there was no law in the state of Washington that you couldn't bone animals and film it? Or either?
Or was it like a misdemeanor, maybe? I don't know.
I don't know, but now under current Washington law, bestiality is now a Class C felony, punishable by up to 5 years in prison. Pinion had previously lost the ability to experience certain sensations after he had a motorcycle accident. Okay, so the guy gets into an accident, and he begins to seek out increasingly extreme sexual acts, sort of as an offset, right? You can see how psychologically that would fit.
Do you think this inspired the movie Crank with Jason Statham?
I don't think so, because he was getting into extremely large dildos and fisting and receiving, anal pleasure from farm animals. In the early 2000s, he found a group of men online nicknamed Zoos. Not very creative. Who began meeting at a farm in an unincorporated area in King County, Washington, for communal weekends. They filmed one another being penetrated by horses, sometimes engaged in sex with each other afterwards, which was also filmed. This was all later posted online. So in the early 2000s, there was a group of men running around calling themselves Zoos, behaving this way, which is not something that shocks me all that much, but the fact that they were filming it and putting it online is pretty shocking.
Do you think if they were around today in 2021, these zoos would storm the Capitol?
You got to think at least one of the zoos was there.
Wait, do you think it was the guy who was dressed in the coyote pelt?
No, he was with the shaman, oh. I heard.
Okay.
According to Charles Maudud, co-writer of the 2007 documentary film Zoo, the men trained the horses to penetrate them by stripping, applying a horse breeding pheromone, and bending over. In 2015, Maudud wrote that the men had a sexual fixation on large penises, quote, that may have had nothing to do with horses, end quote. He also believed Pinion did not truly love horses and was not a true zoophile. Although Pinion had a cast created of the penis of his favorite horse, Strut. I'm not done. After Pinion's death, a video circulated on the internet of Kenneth Pinion engaging in receptive anal intercourse with a horse. The video was nicknamed Mr. Hands or Two Guys, One Horse. The video, intended originally to sexually gratify the viewer, became one of the first viral reaction videos. This video is featured in the documentary Zoo. On his podcast, The Joe Rogan Experience, Joe Rogan showed the video to two guests, Eliza Schlesinger and Josh Zepps, on two separate episodes, which means that that'd be like if I was hosting the show and we had on, you know, like Lance McCullers Jr., starting Astros pitcher, and I was like, hey, Lance, have you heard of Mr. Hands? And have you done DMT? And he was like, no to both. And I was like, how about both right now? And then I showed him Mr. Hands and watched him watch a person have sex with a horse. And then on another episode entirely, I had a guest in here. Let's say it's like, you know, like last year I interviewed a presidential candidate. Let's say it's a presidential candidate in 2024. And I'm like, hey, Madam Presidential Candidate, have you heard of Mr. Hands? And then I show it to her. Rogan had on two guests and made them watch a man have sex with a horse. That man died.
Did he die in the Mr. Hands video?
I don't know. I don't want to know.
So I've always heard people say they're on the Hands team. Does that mean they've watched the video if you're on the Hands team?
I think it's a football term.
Oh.
Kevin and Keith Hodge, a.k.a. the Hodge twins, did a reaction to Two Guys, One Horse. You ever heard of them?
I've not heard of
them. I don't think
anyone
has.
Now I have, though.
I think they added this into the Wikipedia to get more hits on their reaction video.
I think so, too. Now, I want to talk about this. What are the other famous viral reaction videos? So, obviously,
well,
two girls, one cup. What's another one?
I mean, one of them for me was the velociraptor porn. I'm sorry, pterodactyl porn.
Oh, yeah.
It's two men dressed in full pterodactyl gear, making pterodactyl noises, having sex with a woman who just looks like a woman. And it's shot in real old-timey kind of footage in like the Jurassic period, probably.
Yeah. I mean, there's always Lemon Party, one of the...
Lemon Party's an all-timer. One of the more used internet prank sites.
And I think, was it the guy Mr. Big Cock? That's kind of like a viral reaction video.
Is that what they call him?
I don't know. That's what I call him.
That's the PC version of it somehow. It is. Somehow.
Yeah, that kind of
everybody
is like,
knows who you mean though when you say Mr. Big Cock. So we should that's what we should call him.
He's had a humongous resurgence because of COVID.
He had a humongous couple things, huh?
Because like everybody would be like sending out fake news stories about like 500 people died at a hospital.
I got one that
New
was
York.
Like Zelta variant slaughtered entire village in North Carolina, and I was like, "Fuck, Zelta, that sounds terrible." So I clicked on it, and it was Mr. Big Cock. That was like last week. This has been going on for a year and a half now. By the way, he's dead. Another guy that's dead.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. So a documentary of the life and death of Pinion, who, just going out on a limb here to say that I don't think we need a documentary on the life and death of every person who decides to do stuff like this. And the lives led by those who came to the farm near Enumclaw. This documentary debuted at the 2007 Sundance Film Festival under the title Zoo. It was one of 16 winners out of 856 candidates for the festival and played at numerous regional festivals in the U.S. thereafter. Following Sundance, it was also selected as one of the top five American films to be presented at the prestigious Director's Fortnite Sidebar at the 2007 Cannes Film. Cannes? Cons? Whatever. Film Festival. Jared, my question here is, what is it about stories like this that we as humans are drawn to? It's like the serial killer thing, right?
Yeah, yes.
It's the inability to understand what would bring you to a place where you did these things or these acts.
I think it's also like Schadenfreude kind of thing. Like, wow, look at that guy. What you a feel
better
fuck
about,
up.
You feel better about you?
I'm less of a fuck up because I'm not famous for fucking a horse.
It's kind of crazy how much of our society is based on that very concept. It's pretty much the only thing we do with celebrities at this point.
It's all social
I'm
media.
I'm about to do it with one in a minute.
All social media is based on that concept.
And all social media now has bled. Like, back in the day when it was just newspapers and magazines growing up, it was just the celebrities that got that kind of treatment. Then social media came to be, and it was, I mean, just exponential growth in that the sort of way humans operate using what you just described, that Schadenfreude or whatever. Like, making somebody else feel bad about themselves makes you feel better. Everybody knows that. It's what bullies do. But when it's on the internet or when it's a celebrity, we don't feel like it's real. Then that bled all the way through to where it's like we just do it to everybody all the time. You don't even have to be a celebrity anymore. Like, we just hate online. And cancel culture is a big part of that. And it's like we just want to feel better about ourselves.
Yeah.
And one of the easiest ways to do that is to tear down other people.
Yeah, it's a big thing with cancel culture. It's like, don't let the internet cancel somebody for you. Look at what somebody did, and then you decide whether you're canceling them or not, right?
Right. Like, I don't need to participate in online debates about R. Kelly to decide that I'm no longer going to support his music, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's just certain elements of this that have gone a little haywire.
But then you have, like, oh, Dante DiVincenzo wins the national championship for, what team was that? Oh, for Gonzaga. Not Gonzaga. Fuck. The V1. The V1 in Philadelphia. Villanova.
Villanova
beat Michigan. Dante DiVincenzo. Oh my God, he had like 30-something points. And then the next day, Dante DiVincenzo, when he was 13, tweeted out a bad word. Let's cancel him.
Yeah, man.
Get out of the draft.
That's an example of like, we've gone too far. And then, there's Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, good segue.
Who, in other news, over the weekend, as I was trying my best to not pay attention to the rapidly approaching NFL season, I noticed something a little jarring. Texans former QB1, that position now belongs to one Tyrod Taylor.
Who, great quarterback.
Sure.
I've always wanted to see him actually have a chance at a good season.
Well, that's not this year, but maybe soon. Texans former QB1 Deshaun Watson, he's now on the inactive list because he took his ding-a-ling out when he wasn't supposed to, a whole lot, allegedly. Deshaun Watson blocked me on Twitter. And at first I was like, damn, dude. Like, what the hell? I must have talked shit to him after a loss at some point out of frustration, but then I remembered the tweet that likely did it and why. And it's from when I tweeted, Deshaun Watson is either a legit sexual predator or this is one of the most ruthless character assassinations in sports history, and either way, holy hell, which then went on to get 12,000 retweets and 75,000 likes or whatever. And clearly at some point he saw that and went, fuck this guy, and blocked me. Which somehow is all the evidence I need to know this dude sucks one way or the other. Like, if he didn't do what he did, why is he on the Twitter machine throwing blocks at people? Innocent people don't block people on Twitter. They mute them.
Especially when you had a non-take. Your tweet was a non-take.
Middle of the road.
Complete middle of the road.
And my take has since shifted to just full-on fuck this guy. But now even more so because he blocked me. He's in a camp with Darren Revelle.
You don't want to be in that group.
Not the company. Now the list grows weirder, though. Like, if you block me, you're with Darren Revelle and Deshaun Watson. Is that what you want? I don't think so.
Then that's not a group you want to be a part of.
No, it is not.
So how do you feel now that the greatest quarterback in Houston history, including potential, have blocked you on Twitter?
I'm a little proud because of the circumstances, obviously. I'm not a fan of this guy anymore. I'm pretty upset about what he's done to my city and franchise. And before that, apparently many women. So feels good. he was never dishing out anything I needed to see on social media. Whereas I often feel the sting of FOMO from not being able to see Ravel's tweets.
I'll say this, Ross, as a social media guy, you have about 8 other accounts you can just log into in 2 seconds to go and read his tweets. So
another reason blocking people is just straight up weird. Like, yeah. Okay, switch account. There we go. Now yep. I'm looking at everything. Dumbass. Jared, by the way, hit me with a tip for the F1 race, speaking of sports, that took place on Sunday morning. I bet on Max. I won. Jared is the man.
Thank you.
Formula Bone. If you want to be the man like me, or Jared, or just need a sports betting home for all your betting needs, we all know the NFL season is about to start. College football is upon us. There's one place you can bet on sports and support RBP at the same time. That is mybookie.ag. When you use the code RBP upon sign up, they've got all the live lines, prop bets, futures you can handle for betting on sports. And if you're not into sports or you just also love the casino, they have a fantastic casino and a live casino for you to play in while you watch sports if you want to go full the gin. The code is RBP for a deposit bonus when you sign up today at mybookie.ag. Support the show, bet on your sports, hit the casino, mybookie.ag, code RBP on sign up. Get that deposit bonus, put that code in so they know we sent you. And as I mentioned, if you like F1, follow our newest Bolin Media brand for the best F1 coverage in the land, brought to you by our very own J-Bone. At Formula Bone on TikTok, on Instagram, on Twitter.
I'm almost at 1,000 Twitter followers already.
Damn.
In 2021.
That's tough. Growing an account on Twitter is the most difficult place to grow an account. If you're like, who cares? You're at 1,000. No big deal. You got 40,000 on TikTok.
42,000.
42,000. That's right. Speaking of sports, as I mentioned last week, speaking of sports again, as I mentioned last week on patreon.com/Ross Bolin podcast, in my column that supporters of the show and our enforcer or OG tier may have read, I do not have a fantasy football team this year. My first fantasy list season since I was like 15 years old, and Deshaun Watson blocked me, and the entire Texans franchise is an embarrassment. So for the first time maybe ever in my life, college football is somehow more exciting to me than the NFL, even though I don't have a team. It's more enjoyable without all the dread and the shame and secondhand embarrassment. So over the weekend, I fully dug in. I rode Notre Dame -7. I was one of many who was reminded that Mackenzie Milton is a person at all. And I lost that bet. And I didn't even care because watching this dude, Mackenzie Milton, come out was insane. So for those of you who didn't watch the game or haven't heard this story yet, Mackenzie Milton, it was a tiny white dude on Florida State that was a top 10 Heisman candidate in 2018. And then he had a horrible injury, like his exploded his leg.
Yes, he played for UCF and was playing, I believe, in the bowl game in Tampa. And literally his leg, this is like way worse than the Dak injury or like...
One of the worst leg injuries in football history, probably.
Alex Smith equivalent.
Yes, and he hasn't played football since. Like his leg died on the field. Like it was over. He returned to football for the first time since that injury in 2018. On Saturday or Sunday, whenever the game was. There was weird schedule this weekend because of the long holiday. But one of the doctors that like worked on him said that he would never walk again without like pretty severe pain after, probably. And this dude is slanging it out there on the field. Like just one of the coolest, most inspiring sports stories I've heard in a minute. Like I was sitting there watching him. The first possession, he drove down the field and scored a touchdown. And I was thinking about, what is it about this moment that I would have missed when I was a little kid? And it's the amount of work that went into him getting back there that I would have never understood as a child. That like now I'm looking at it and the reason I'm like, you know, my hair is standing up on my arm is because I know this dude worked for 3 years to get back for this one moment where everybody in the stadium is holding their breath the entire drive because he's getting drilled every play because he's like 5'6" or something. Or at least that's what he looks like out there. It looks smaller than Drew Brees. And it's just amazing that he didn't just say, fuck this, I'm going to go just do a normal college career and find a job, right?
Yeah, because he was still on UCF, and eventually, he this whole time, he was like, I'm going to get back. And the coaching staff's like, yeah, we're not going to plan for that. You keep trying, then, Mackenzie.
Because the doctors were like, that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah. And he kept trying. Eventually, the UCF's like, hey, yeah, we're going with this guy. I think it's Dylan Gabriel still. And so he transferred to FSU. And the FSU coach is like, hey, like, we're not guaranteeing you a spot because you'd be an idiot to guarantee him a spot. Because at this point, he's still just, like, recovering.
They could have gone back out there, gotten hit once, and been like, oh, nope, this didn't work out.
I think McKenzie, number one, I've been watching him for years. My brother is an insane UCF fan.
Oh.
Dan Rogester, close friend of mine.
Yeah, that's true.
Deluded UCF fan. So, like, I've been forced to watch McKenzie Milton play for years. He's so good. Like, if he was, he is a one of those quarterbacks who you get where you're like, oh, he's only good because he's in the AAC. He's in a Power Six conference or a group of six, whatever, five, whatever the fuck.
Whatever it is now.
He's in a shit league, essentially. And no, he is a phenomenal quarterback. And I hope that they go with him over this other dude because, like, what a story.
Ah, man, you could hear it and you could feel it in the stadium. Yeah. You could see his teammates. It was wild. And then, oh, by the way, the Seminoles covered as well.
Because of him.
Good teams win. Great teams cover. They fucked me and I lost money, but good for them. But the commentators came close to making me ride the full roller coaster from, like, I mean, I literally was rooting against my own money and for McKenzie Milton during that the first drive. And then 15 minutes later, the commentators had soured the entire story to the point that I was like hoping this medical miracle gets truck sticked because they wouldn't shut up. It was bad. And I know it's a crazy story. It's really cool. But the way that they overdid it, like the sort of the amount of theatrics, like it made it to where people watching were like, okay, are they exaggerating how much this kid had to do to come back? Like that's how sort of over the top they made it feel. So like they didn't do a great job of delivering it in a way that the audience would really understand to the point that it got annoying for me.
They called him a medical miracle.
Yeah. Which, even if he is, like, come on, guys. It's a football game.
Yeah.
People are, you know.
There's people who are like.
There's real world issues going on here. Like, I hate that about sports. It's one thing that kind of weirds me out. Like, we pretend it's sort of the end all be all and when we're in the midst of it. Like, with the commentating and everything. And I get it. I get it. It's supposed to be a distraction that helps us with the realities, the harsh realities of the world. But, like. It's one of the things I loved about the demonstrations that started in the NFL that caused so much backlash. It was like, why the fuck do we act like this is removed from everything else? It's not. It's directly connected. We should be embracing that. Like, sports and life are very much intertwined in our society and all everything that we have going. So,
wow, anyway, Ross watches Ted Lasso one time and starts talking about politics and sports.
Yeah. I'm like halfway through season, or I guess I'm...
You're caught up, probably.
Four episodes into season two. God, what a great show. Really is. First thing that I've enjoyed on Apple TV Plus.
How come therapists keep getting brought into shows that you watch?
It's just most TV shows at this point. Like, there's a character that has a panic attack in every TV show. There's therapy in a lot of TV shows. I think it's in part because a lot of writers have endured mental health issues, and a lot of creative people have endured mental health issues, and they have experience in therapy. And they know it's beneficial, so they try to insert it into likable characters like Ted Lasso in an effort to get more people, especially men, to be okay with going to therapy so that our society can heal and suck less. That's my personal feeling and theory.
It's a good take.
Yeah. So now it's time for me to dish some takes on one certified lover boy, which my first take is this. I hate the album title. If you have to make it Certified Lover Boy and then get people to call it CLB so that they don't have to say Certified Lover Boy because that's such a lame thing to say, then maybe just choose a different title, bro. It was like, Views was a great name for an album. Like, what the fuck is Certified Lover Boy? And that doesn't fit with the vibe of the album for me. I joked a lot. I can't remember if it was on Patreon or our Apple Podcasts or Spotify last week, but I joked that we were poking fun at the fact that Drake admitted this album is about toxic masculinity and that it's heartbreaking. When you listen to it and you listen to the best songs, some of which my favorites I'll get into in a second, none of that makes me think like this should be titled Certified Lover Boy. Like, it just doesn't really make sense. So I love the album cover. I love his marketing. I love the way he's always, that's one of the areas his team is a cut above everybody else, man. Like, even above Kanye, who goes through the trouble to do like a month worth of listening parties. Like, Drake's marketing, one. His marketing team, one. In fact, I would argue that in general, he won. this whole beef thing between him and Kanye, he is crushing Kanye currently. It's not close. Happy to admit that as a Kanye fan in this circumstance. I don't think that's necessarily fair, a fair fight, but he is beating the shit out of him currently. He released a track from Donda over the weekend. Drake did. To escalate his beef with Kanye West that featured a verse from Andre 3000 from Outkast talking about his late mother. That Drake could even access that to release it is fucking indicative of a problem in Kanye's camp. How the hell did Drake get this unreleased song? And why the fuck is it unreleased?
Yeah, Andre 3000 is universally known as one of the best
to ever do it.
Yes.
Universally respected as is one of the greatest artists in the history of rap. It doesn't make any sense, man. That's what let you know. The dude isn't okay. None of this is a fair fight. The entire thing is a mess. It's just like the whole Drake Kanye thing, I'm not with it anymore. If you want to be a fan of either one, that's cool. But the beef between them is mostly manufactured so that both of them can sell more records. And there's just no one in the world who can convince me otherwise at this point. If they stood in my backyard and shot at each other with actual pistols, I would still be like, yeah, but y'all aren't hitting each other. This is fake, bro. This is so you guys can move units. And I'm cool with that. That's their job. Which brings me to the real point and the only thing that matters. I put the albums in about the same spot. They're totally different kind of albums. As I said over the weekend on Twitter, Jared and I and some of the other Bowling Media people and affiliates got together. And when people were headed over to the house, I was like thinking about what to throw on music-wise. I was like, well, I can't exactly put on Donda and just let it run. I can't. Half of it's stuff that should have been on Jesus is King. It's a gospel album. Half of it's incredibly depressing or about his dead mother. These are not the vibes I want for a party. So I put on Certified Lover Boy to kind of see what that felt like. Guess what? It's perfect for that. Or driving around music. It's good for stuff. And it's got like six songs on it that I genuinely think are bangers, all of which I will name now. One, In the Bible, featuring Lil Durk and Givian. First time I heard it, didn't think much of it, moved on. It's one of those Drake songs. It burrows its way into your head. The chorus is great. He's an all-time chorus god, undeniably. He's like if Nate Dogg was also really, really good at everything else. Rest in peace, Nate Dogg. Next song, Fair Trade, featuring Travis Scott. First time I heard it, didn't really care for it. Same thing happened. Next one, first time I heard it, I was like, oh shit, that's one of the ones. It's No Friends in the Industry. It's just more bars than in the entire Kanye album from Kanye in one song from Drake. That's all I need to say about that. Knife Talk, featuring 21 Savage and Project Pat. You put Project Pat on anything, I love it. Project Pat's one of the dudes I grew up with, one of the famous like 3-6 Mafia affiliated Tennessee rappers that, man, we used to put this dude on all the time. It didn't make sense. We were suburban white kids, and most of his songs were about murder and slang and crack. We fucking loved it. And 21 Savage is one of the most entertaining people currently living. He's like the new Snoop. You know how Snoop can do anything and it's entertaining? Commenting on wildlife videos, getting hired to do boxing matches, and he's just wildly entertaining. Hilarious guy. 21 Savage, watch him do fucking anything, including perform, and it is hilarious. It's not good live. Did you see him at ACL?
No.
Holy, I've seen some bad rap shows, man. We all have. Rap's a hard thing to pull off live. This man shouldn't even be doing live shows. It's detrimental to his career. Next song, 7 a.m. on Bridal Path. This is an entire song about Kanye. He finally does it. He finally breaks out all of the bars that I needed to hear to give a shit that they have any issues at all, real or fake. And look, the song's title in and of itself is, again, genius. It's where I see Drake playing checkers when Kanye's playing chess. Kanye puts Drake's address on Instagram. Drake names a song his address, references the address thing. One of the lines in the song is like, why didn't you, instead of putting that on the gram, put it in your fucking GPS, like, come see me like a man. It was not that. I just made it rhyme different for some reason.
That's kind of good, though.
Accidentally. But that's another one where I'm like, yeah, that's tough to argue with. You leaked the man's address, and he threw it right back in your face, man. It's just, that's tough to do, and it's another reason I say he's beating his ass. You Only Live Twice, featuring Rick Ross and Lil Wayne, is is good. It's also sort of offensive somehow. Like Lil Wayne was like, I'm just going to go full pussy eating 2005 Lil Wayne again.
Yeah, this, I think when I was watching you do your live stream on Twitch, I commented saying that not a single sentence of Wayne's verse could ever be played on a radio edit.
They're going to just have to remove it for the radio. Like that cannot be, it's just going to be beep the whole time. What the hell? So,
and wait, you didn't notice, I noticed in this list of your favorite songs, I don't hear the, I'm too sexy for my shirt.
Nope. But I will say this. You know who he copied with that shit? You know what that whole song is like? What that reminds me of is Eminem. You know how M would always drop a funny single? It wasn't a good rap song. It wasn't a hot track. It was some silly shit with a really, really funny music video that went with it. That's this song for Drake.
Like Fack?
Except it plays both ways. Exactly like Fack. F-A-C-K if you want to look up the lyrics for Eminem's Fack. So the video is hysterical. Kawhi Leonard is in it, for example. The whole thing is like mocking itself, and it's genius. Again, no, it's not supposed to be a good song. Now that I've seen the video, I like it.
Wait, Kawhi Leonard's in a video about being too sexy?
Yeah, the whole thing is like, there's self-referential with the comedy of it. It's amazing, dude. And that's one of the things about Drake that, love him or hate him, you cannot deny the entertainment value.
One thing, here's a weird dynamic, though. It's like right now when people insult Joe Biden, it's like, if you have any semblance of an okay diss, there's nothing he could ever do in his current state to get back to you in a way that is better, right? So like Drake throwing back the address thing in Kanye's face, it's like, yeah, you already know Kanye can't respond to that though. Like, as long as you just respond, it's going to be better than his diss originally was.
Yeah, but to really shit it down his throat is like, that I appreciate because that actually elevates it and makes it entertaining. And it's like, I don't want these two morons to actually hurt each other or do anything to each other physically. But please attack the shit out of each other through your music. It's wild. It's great. It's one of the best things that can happen in rap. 50 Cent beefing with Ja Rule got me through like a year and a half of hard times. Because every day there was another fucking diss song to listen to. Who the shit could care about the problems of the world when you had Eminem and or 50 Cent and Eminem and Dr. Dre literally ruining Ja Rule's entire life? It was amazing. I hope that doesn't happen again. But Ja Rule, frankly, deserved it. And we've seen such.
No, he came back on his feet.
Firefest. That man just doesn't know semblance of conscience.
My point being, Kanye is the Joe Biden of rap, which is funny because
You're saying because he's old and senile and he can't defend himself.
But I think I know who he voted for, so it's kind of ironic.
Himself.
Only in the states where he could.
Yeah.
And he probably wrote himself in for the other
one. You can only vote in one state, Jared. Right, Jared?
No, you can travel around.
Jared?
Travel around.
Did you vote in multiple states, Jared?
Hey, all I'm saying is this.
Are they going to storm Bolin Media headquarters next, Jared? Did we steal the election, Jared?
Stop the count in Michigan, but keep counting in Arizona. That's all I'm trying to
say. That's all I'm trying to say, too. Also trying to say this. Rest in peace to Michael K. Williams. One of the best actors of my lifetime. One of the guys that I've enjoyed watching for probably 20 years now. He was on The Wire, one of the greatest television shows ever made, as one of the most memorable characters of the show. A gay gangster named Omar, who had more memorable lines in that show than most people do in their whole career. On Boardwalk Empire, he was Chalky. He's probably the greatest actor in the history of HBO.
He was on The Night Of as well.
He was in a ton of HBO stuff, but he was Chalky on Boardwalk Empire, Omar on The Wire. Go look at his IMDb, Michael K. Williams. It's a ridiculous career. Barrett and I, my co-host on Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, our television and film podcast, are going to spend a bit of time talking about him and his career today, throwing him his due flowers after the fact. So make sure you listen to OCC this week. And go watch some of his work if you haven't. He was amazing. We lost Mac Miller 8 years ago yesterday, by the way, speaking of rest in pieces. Also, in a less sad subject, over the weekend I was watching College Game Day and all that, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, man, remember when we got the mugshot on the College Game Day? That was so funny. It was such a cool moment. But we kind of played if we did it again, and we don't even really use the mugshot like we used to. So what I was like, what could we get on College Game Day that would be fun for us, like as a listenership. Because, like, let's be realistic. That's not really a way to grow the show, but it is fun for us who already listen to the show, right? And somebody replied, my wife left me. And I was like, oh my God, obviously. We have to try to get everybody who listens to the show that's in college, that's in a city where College Game Day takes place, or that is traveling to one. Please attempt to get a My Wife Left Me sign on College Game Day. That would be very, very funny.
Okay, I had a thought about this. Like, if you're okay with it, it would be way funnier if it said Ross Boland's wife left him. Because that gets branding for the show. It spreads our message.
Okay,
and
I like it.
It's the funniest thing of all time.
I like it. Then it is specific to us. And then there is another layer to it. And people are like, who? And they Google it. Okay, there we go. And we have an episode called My Wife Left Me. They could end up listening to that.
Ross Boland's wife left him.
That's what it needs to say. Ross Boland's wife left him. And that's it. No explanation. If people ask you about it, you just say, like, shut the fuck up, mind your business. and that's it. Like, and if anybody asks you about the sign on your way into College Game Day, you say it has nothing to do with any brands or any,
and
anything. Say it's just a joke.
It's not insulting to anybody either.
Yeah. Say
you're Ross Boland.
Say you're Ross Boland, yeah. It's a Spartacus thing. We're all Ross Boland now. So yeah, I love that. Ross Boland's wife left him. Get that on College Game Day. Happy 22nd birthday to Tyler Emanuel. Thank you for all your support. Happy 25th to one of our listeners named Keef. We are actually the number one podcast in the world for people named Keef, like OCC is the number one podcast in the world for people named Tyler. Shout out Drake for taking up the challenge on Twitter and working the Greek Freak's real last name into a song. I will leave you today with this line from 7 a.m. on Bridal Path. Don't move like a punto. Could at least keep it a buck like Ante Tecumpo.
Go low, baby.